that you may have if you've thought about it. And if you don't, that's fine too. But what are your expectations as a group, as an audience, for this Bible study series? Anybody want to go first? Steve Walden.
Bring into focus the modern day applications for the various prophets, not just historically what they were talking about in their current time, okay, but how it's applied to modern day Israel, as we know, as United States, U.S., and B.C.
Focus on modern day application.
Correct.
Okay. I thought I was going to be able to add this, but in the projection view, you can't do it. So I was going to just do it as you gave it to me, but I'll just do it on paper. I'll add it later. So who else? Any other expectations that anybody would have as a result? Well, in other words, what I'm looking for is, what do you want to get out of this class? What is it that, I mean, you've obviously read the Minor Prophets before, but what do you want or what do you expect as a result of finishing this course? Mr. Anderson.
I'd really like to win a good gift.
Nice. Well, we'll see about that, won't we? Your family's 2 for 4 already, so who knows? Anybody else? What are some expectations? Certainly modern-day application is a great one. I mean, that kind of leaps to the page.
I guess the other thing is the converse. You know, what were the conditions locally for the individual prophet? What did he, what was he going through in his own life, and you know why was he talking to the group he was talking to?
Okay, very good, very good, very reasonable. Okay, over for Joe Dwornik.
One of the things I noticed about Jonah was he had to go tell the people to repent, and he was afraid they were going to. He just really disliked them, and we have to watch that. We don't have those same dislikes because they're not one of our group.
All good, but what would be your expectation as a result of, okay, you specified Jonah, but do you have any other expectations about looking into Jonah? So I'm not looking for a commentary on the books itself here, which is kind of what you're giving, but what are your expectations as you go through the course itself?
I got to look at my life to make sure that I'm in line with God and not prejudicial with
good
against other people that do not believe the same way we do.
Very good. That ties in well with Jonah. Okay. Very good. Okay. Who else? A lot of thinkers here. Ray?
The Minor Prophets have, it's loaded with symbolism. And I would like to know what the symbolism really means in our kind of an understanding.
Okay, good.
Yeah.
Good.
That,
very good.
Yeah, there's yeah, there symbol, are, there's a ball and there's 7 eyes and stuff like that.
Yeah, that's good. Yeah, that's all great. Some of the books are just absolutely filled with lots and different symbols and some not so much. But yes, we will definitely cover that. Anybody else? Yes. Albina. Oh, no, I thought saw a hand there. It's dark in here. So, Sheila.
Well, some of the prophets overlap each other, and our contemporaries, I kind of like to know how they relate to each other or if they even ever have any contact with each other much.
Okay. We'll even actually cover some of that today. Anyone else? Mr. Gatlin?
You know what really interests me and I enjoy is when you read the New Testament, sometimes they actually quoted the Old Testament. That's a joke. The connection between the prophets and the prophecies and everything with the New Testament and how they related those prophecies to us and expounded many, many times expounded on them. I love seeing the connection between the two. Bring them all together.
So the contact between the prophets, especially in this case the minor prophets, and New Testament quotations and New Testament references to those individuals. And
how they all work together and give us a better understanding. Yes,
okay, good.
Absolutely.
Very good. All right, we'll try to do that.
For instance, like Revelation, so much of what's in Revelation, you go into the Isaiah and whatnot, and it's like word for word. It's amazing.
Good. Okay. Anyone else? Well, okay. Okay, all right. Jeannie? So the people online can hear you.
Understanding the difference of the culture of that time compared to the culture of this time.
Okay, very good.
Sometimes it changes your understanding.
Perception, yeah, good. Okay, is that a good start? Here's what I will challenge you to do. You've heard what some of the expectations are. If you have any others, send them this week while it's fresh on your mind. Okay? So let's go forward then. And where's my thing here? Okay. So we've got your expectations. So now these are the... Is that not changed? Is this not changed at all? Okay, well, it's... Okay, well, that is really weird. Okay, wait a minute. Let's see. There's a little... Okay, hold on. Sorry. I may have saved this presentation to the cloud, so if you'll... Okay, there we go. All right. All right. So some of these, I thought that since I could see it on the screen, I thought I could see it. So this, I've covered this slide. I've covered the expectations. And so now here is the biblical order on the left, how they appear in your Bible. So beginning with Hosea, Joel, sorry, Joe, I didn't mean to, a little typo there. All the Joes, three Joes. I just did that for you guys. I wanted to go in and correct that. So I don't think I can correct it now. But that shows you the order. The general chronological order is found over on this side. So now if you don't get that, you don't want to have to write all that down, scribble it fast and blah, blah, blah. You don't have to, because I'll send you out some notes. I'll just send it to everybody on the mailing list. And if you're not on my mailing list or church mailing list, those of you that are watching, then send me an email, stevekbuchanan@me.com, and I'll get these notes to you so that you can have them. I'll either send you, I can send you the PowerPoint presentation. Some people don't have PowerPoint, can't use it, like me today. So, but this is the order in which the prophets actually lived and they prophesied. And I think that that is an interesting way of looking at it, because if you're talking about a kingdom that was united at one time, and let's say for rough figures, 1000 BC or 950 BC, when Saul and David and Solomon were kings, and then this kingdom is divided between Rehoboam and Jeroboam, then I think it's kind of interesting to know exactly what time period we're dealing with. So the last book is the last book of the Old Testament, too. Yes? I don't know. What we'll do, though, is we'll... Those are great questions. Let's save all questions from here on out to the end. So now here are the... I had to get that into Steve, so that'd be a good question at the end that I wouldn't be able to answer to. So, so here are the various times, and this is something that you had asked about, Sheila. How do they coordinate with the other prophets? And I think if we could have just a little less light, then you'd be able to see this a little bit better and come out in a little bit more contrast, if that's possible. Turn off maybe one more row or bank or something, because it makes it a little bit easier for me to see. Okay, is that better or worse? Oh, okay. So 9th century is called the early Assyrian period, because that's when Assyria was the dominant nation. And so the contemporary for that period would be Isaiah. But you can see that Obadiah and Joel and Jonah were all earlier. Can you see that, Joe? Is that okay? I'm not in front of you. Okay. So then you come down to the period in which Amos, these individuals lived in this is as Assyria's rising as a power and just as a power on the horizon. If these guys were warning about nations coming from afar, then it would be like, you know, in the 1950s of the United States, people warning of Germany rising again and overtaking us, which was impossibility at that time. So that's how it would be viewed. And then Assyria had become the major power during the time of Amos, Hosea, and Micah. So understanding when they, and then knowing that Jeremiah is really speaking a lot later on from any of these. I didn't put them, you know, that you shouldn't confuse this from this side to this. It's not a line, but this is just the different times in which these individuals lived. So Jeremiah, Ezekiel, and Daniel were all contemporary, and they were all part of the Judean exile of 603-604 to 585 BC. So when you get down to the 7th century before Christ, this is when Babylon was preeminent. And of course, all these prophecies, first you've got the prophecies and the prophets that went to the northern kingdom and warned them about impending problems, and that's where Jonah comes in. He was even sent to the Assyrians ahead of time, and they repented. And 100 years later, they invaded and took people away. They didn't, you know, they didn't stay repentant for a long time. Oop, pardon me. And then we come down to the period of which the period of the Judean captivity, where Babylon takes the Jews into captivity, the southern kingdom, and then you've got these prophets who all lived in what is called the post-exilic time. That is when the second temple is built, and that's when the wall around Jerusalem is built. That's the time period in which the temple was finally completed, all the way down to Malachi, who was probably a contemporary in the times of Ezra and Nehemiah. So that is the order in which these individuals prophesied, just to give you a general idea. Now, this is a lot to write down. This is a lot to, you know, to grasp all at one time. I just suggest you do what I've done, which is just totally memorize everything from here on out. These are just the baseline dates that I included, and I'm going to interrupt the... No, I'll wait till the end, because if I interrupt the flow, I don't know if I'll get this back. So, but I'm going to come back to a... I told you I was going to show you something that my brother had done, and I found out that he did this Excel spreadsheet that several people have gotten, and it is a chronology from the time of creation. And he... It's just an unbelievable thing, and I've told people if you get it, do not hit the print button. Because, and Bonnie was even telling me yesterday, she says, well, I thought about just sending it to Kinko's. I said, don't do that. Don't send it to Kinko's. Because Steve Walden and I think it was you and I that figured out that there are like over 200,000 pages on this Excel spreadsheet. So it is like, I sent it, James said, hey, I want to look at that. I want to look at these chronology. And he tried to open it up on his phone, and it just about blew his phone up, seriously. So we'll save that for the end here. But this just gives you some general dates. Some of these are Huey's dates, and I think he was fairly accurate. He was off work for about a year back in the early 2000s, and he spent half of the day looking for a new job, and the other half of the day he was a real wizard at Excel. He was an expert. The best I've ever seen in Excel, as you will see, he spent working on this chronology for a year. So you'll see it later. But some of these dates are like, this is when Israel enters the promised land, the first year of Saul's kingdom, he reigned for 40 years, the death of Saul, first year of David. These are just general dates to give you an understanding of what is happening through history. And as you read the Bible, these are very, very important to keep in mind. In 932, approximately, when the kingdom split, and there's the scriptural reference, God took the kingdom away from Solomon because of his many wives, his idolatry, as you know, and then the kingdom was divided with Jeroboam over Israel. That would be the 10 tribes, and Samaria, basically we say 10 tribes, and then Rehoboam over Judah, which is the southern kingdom. And then these are just classic dates of the captivity by Assyria, by the 10 tribes, and then the captivity of Judah by Babylon and Nebuchadnezzar, and then 539, the fall of Babylon, and then the Jews returning back to Jerusalem. That's when Cyrus came to power, and when the Jews were granted, remember, and only about, was it 50,000 or so went back to Jerusalem, and the rest were either stayed in Babylon or, you know, things were comfortable there. But that's found in Ezra and Nehemiah. Okay, so why are there prophets in the first place? Why did the prophetic office, why did it come into being? Well, remember when God first created Adam and Eve, how did he communicate with them? Face to face, right? And then with other servants of God, it was also in many cases face to face, like with Abraham, for instance, direct communication with God, with the one that we believe became Jesus Christ. 1 Corinthians 10 shows that that is the, that he was the God of the Old Testament, and that he is the one that came into contact with many of these people, but after he didn't always maintain that kind of contact on a personal level. And as the nation grew, if you read the first couple of chapters of the book of Judges, he sent angels to visit them and communicate with them. And he also allowed for there to be the office of a prophet. And in Exodus 19 and verse 5, "Now therefore, if you indeed will obey my voice and keep my covenant, then you shall be a special treasure to me above all people. For all the earth is mine, and you shall be to me a kingdom of priests and a holy nation." That's what God intended for Israel, right? All 12 tribes, he intended for this to happen, that they would be the outstanding example that all the other nations would want to follow. And unfortunately, what happened, as we know, is that they followed the other nations. They forgot God. They both sets of peoples, Israel and Judah, went into captivity at several times. So in Deuteronomy, which is the restatement of the law, God says, "Be careful to observe the law, for this is your wisdom and your understanding in the sight of the peoples who will hear all these statutes and say, surely this great nation is wise and understanding people. For what great nation is there that God is so near to it as the Lord our God is to us for whatever reason, etc., etc., etc.?" And then in Deuteronomy, a little bit further on, they were told that God would raise up a prophet from their midst. And as you can see, that they were to understand that he shall speak to them all that I command them, and it shall be that whoever will not hear my words, which he speaks in my name, that I will require it of him. But if the prophet doesn't speak for God, then ignore him. Don't pay any attention to him is basically what he is saying. When a prophet speaks in the name of the Lord, if the thing does not happen or come to pass, that is the thing which the Lord has not spoken. The prophet has spoken presumptuously. You shall not be afraid of him. So even at that early stage in the history of Israel, there is the potential of false prophets. And what is it that is one of the things that is next on the scene in Matthew 24, the Olivet prophecy, is false prophets. So that's something to be aware of. And the easy litmus test is found in Isaiah 8 and verse 20. If they speak not according to the law, then you don't pay attention to them. Okay, now, we got into a little bit of this within the sermon. Now, I want you to know that the sermon has been planned for about 3 weeks, but I got sick, and I was sick for the first couple of times that I was supposed to give it. Walt and Joe have done an incredible job of just, not in some cases filling in, because in some cases they were scheduled to speak, but just thank goodness for both of them to be able to continue. Because I know that people really like to have, one of those occasions, we were going to play a video from the home office or something, and Mr. Horchak volunteered and said, "Look, I know people don't like to watch a video, and I don't either, so I'll speak." And he gave a sermon several weeks ago, and thank you for that. It was a great, great message. But now we get into another aspect of Bible prophecy that also really affects the study of the minor prophets, and that is the birthright blessings. Now, I realize that for many of you, this is kind of old hat. okay, but I don't know who's watching out there, and I want to make sure that I get down to the ground level to where everybody has the same baseline approach to this understanding. God promised Abram blessings of national prominence and greatness if he obeyed his voice. And this is mentioned several times in the life of Abraham. And, oops, get the... God told him to get out of his country, and I will make you a great nation. And I'll bless your name great, and you shall be a blessing. I will bless those who bless you, and I will curse him who curses you. And you find out that even within the lifetime of Abraham, that this was the case. Research his life, and you can find out that there are people that came to Abraham, and they said, look, we want you to be able to bury your dead of your family in our fields if you want to. That's how much respect and honor that they gave to him. That, you know, whatever you want, look, we realize that you're a great man and God is with you. And so he was a great man. And it's by his obedience that we enjoy everything that we have around us. And all the families of the earth shall be blessed, which is what I referred to today. The rising tide lifts all boats. And that's what has happened even in the 20th and 21st centuries. The rising tide of God's blessings given to a people that were given his law and lived their lives according to that law has benefited everybody in the world. And I'm sorry that some people don't believe that and don't understand that and have said that America's no good, really, or bad group, but this is because of God. America has not always done everything correctly. The United Kingdom did not always do things correctly, but God honored Abraham by extending those blessings after seven times. Now, Abraham's obedience and not withholding Isaac is one of the main reasons that those best blessings were passed on. So verse 17 of chapter 22, blessing I will bless you, multiplying I will multiply your descendants as the stars of the heaven and as the sand of the sea which is on the seashore, and your descendants shall possess the gates of their enemies. Every single vital pass and sea gate throughout the 19th and the 20th century was controlled and has been controlled either by the British Empire or by the United States of America. And if there hadn't been a Royal Navy, if there hadn't been a U.S. Navy in the 20th century guarding and protecting these vital passes, the world economy would be chaotic. But what the United States and the British Empire did before that was guarantee the safe arrival of goods and services in ports all over the world because they had the power to enforce it. You can't underestimate how that has gone because remember, this world has been cursed with leaders who have minds of beasts, who want total dominion, which are ravenous. And they've been chomping at the bit to take this nation down because it's been the top dog for certainly since the end of World War I. In chapter 27, these are the promises that were given to Jacob that as on his deathbed, Jacob got these promises by deceit and he was a deceitful person and he had to learn a lesson about that. But, you know, he thought he was giving it to Esau. You know, Isaac thought, oh, this is Esau, my favorite, you know. Jacob was his mom's favorite. A little parental lesson, don't have favorites. Although Stephen, I really like Stephen a lot. No, I'm just kidding. He has my name. plenty of grain and wine, and let the people serve you, and nations bow down to you. Now, people didn't like the bluster of Donald Trump, but he made the nations heal. Even NATO. No, Donald Trump is a crude, boorish, and his embrace of some things, even lately, I mean, has just been crazy to me. But the one thing he was proud of America. Proud of America, and looked at, wait a minute, we've been footing the bill for the protection of Europe and they don't care. They're just letting us do it. Pay up. I miss kind of that, but I don't think it's ever coming back, so don't worry. But be master over your brethren, you know, even over his own brothers. This is to Jacob. Jacob was going to be the master over Esau. That'll be the first Bible study we cover, by the way, is the book of Obadiah, which is a prophecy of Esau. So, cursed be everyone who curses you, and blessed be those who bless you. And that's basically been the case. Whenever we have alliances with nations that people would call Gentile nations or not of Israel, they align themselves with our purpose, and, you know, we have a good friendly relationship. It goes good for them. All right, now, those blessings were passed on to Jacob, and Jacob had a lot of overcoming. He had to repent. And the Bible shows that he did deeply repent as an individual. And he wrestled with God. Now, whether he wrestled with God or wrestled with an angel, what does it matter? The angel is speaking for God. I'm not going to get lost in that. But the main thing is he overcame, he repented, he changed from his deceitful nature of being a supplanter to being an overcomer. And his name was changed to Israel. So this is all like fundamental and it's so important and it gets detailed and everything, but it's fundamental to understanding that there were 12 tribes of Israel, not just the Jews, that there was Reuben, Simeon, Levi, Judah, Zebulun, Issachar, Dan, Gad, Asher, Naphtali, Joseph, and Benjamin. And Joseph is mentioned there because Joseph had two sons, Manasseh and Ephraim. Now, a lot of people in the church I've found over the years thought Ephraim was the oldest. And he never was. Ephraim's the youngest. And Genesis teaches us that. Don't answer it. Or is that the timer or something? Who's the guilty party? Fess up. Okay. Oh, boy. Yeah. We just don't disfellowship people anymore on the spot, so. Okay, very important prophecy here in Genesis 48. Jacob, Israel, is on his deathbed. Joseph, the one who saves Egypt and saves all of his brothers and all of his family, he brings his sons, Ephraim and Manasseh. As you'll see that Ephraim, who was the younger, and his left hand on Manasseh's head, and, you know, Joseph tried to figure that out. But the blessing was, the most important aspect of the blessing is, bless the lads, let my name, that's Jacob, be named upon them, and the name of my fathers, Abraham and Isaac, and let them grow in a multitude in the midst of the earth. That means, along with several other scriptures we're going to cover, that the vast majority of the birthright blessings were passed down to two sons, not all 12. Now, not that they all haven't been blessed, but to the two most significantly, and we'll see that. Genesis 48 and 49, Deuteronomy 33, show that the lion's share, the biggest part of the blessings, went to these two individuals, Manasseh and Ephraim. That is fundamental to understanding Bible prophecy. Look what it said in Genesis 49:20. May God make you as Ephraim and Manasseh. He said that to all of his sons. May you be like these two most blessed, because they are incredibly blessed. Yeah, may you be like that. And that's what, let's face it, in the 19th century, every nation wanted to be Great Britain. They didn't want to do the things Great Britain did, but they wanted the blessings that Great Britain did. You know, Spain got such a head start on becoming a world power in the 1400s and the 1500s. They had everything that Britain did not have. They had a navy. They were explorers. They were going all over the world. They were going to South America. But who ends up as the top dog? 1588, Spanish Armada tries to invade Britain. God says, no, it's not going to happen. Britain ends up to be the world power and gets bigger and stronger. So, thus he set Ephraim before Manasseh. So, really, basically what that means is that Great Britain became great and really great before the United States did. Their power began to tail off after the currency of the world The standard operating currency was sterling silver. After between World War I and World War II, and right after World War II, that changed from British sterling to the U.S. dollar. So, but they rose first in prominence. Now, Genesis 49, it isolates Joseph, and it talks about, in these verses, verse 22 through 26, it shows blessings of incredible power, economics, of mineral wealth. It's all summed up in these verses. Pardon me. It's all summed up here. Got excited with the clicker here. Hold on. Come on. Okay. Sorry about that. Let me go back. Okay. Got to get my pointer here. All right. Genesis 49:22. His bow remained in strength. The arms of his hands were made strong by the hands of the mighty God of Jacob. Many instances in history where you can point to the incredible turn of events, divine intervention, whatever you want to call it, in wars and various things in which God has made it possible for the Great Britain and the United States to come out on top. But it says in verse 26, you know, the blessings of the deep, that's mineral wealth, oil, blessings of the breast and of the womb, of, you know, having the right kind of population, a population who would be able to support being a world power just enough. The blessings of your father have excelled the blessings of my ancestors up to the utmost bound of the everlasting hills. They shall be on the heads of Joseph and on the crown of him who was separate from his brothers. So you see, God intended for them to be even more blessed than the rest, like Naphtali and Dan and Reuben and everybody else. So in Deuteronomy 33, it's a mirror image of that. At the middle of the page where I have it bolded, again, it says the crown of on the head of him who was separate from his brothers. So all of his brothers are mentioned in these two chapters. And so they're kind of set above in many different times in Bible prophecy. In the end, there are the 10,000s of Ephraim. And not that their population was greater. It was at one time much greater than the United States of America, but it was the populations they controlled. Portions of China, vast portions of China, India, Africa, all over the world. Really incredible, incredible blessings. Now, I made this chart because this kind of gives you a clue as to what might be important to take a look at when you do your own personal Bible study. This is in the order in which these books are in your Bible. Okay, that's just the way I did it for this chart. But in Hosea, for instance, Israel as a name is mentioned 44 times. So now knowing what you know, if you didn't know it before, now knowing what you know about Israel, what might you guess would be the topic or who would be the people who were important to this prophet, Hosea? Who might he be most interested or who might God be speaking to more directly if Israel is synonymous with Jacob, synonymous with Joseph, synonymous with Ephraim, and Samaria, and all of those add up to this much, who's the prophecy to? I mean, it's pretty easy to deduce, right? This is mostly a prophecy to the northern kingdom, the 10 tribes. And then Judah is mentioned 6 times, and there are times never in history before. There have been times in which Judah and Israel have had prophecies that affect both of them at the very same time. Only at the time of the end. Only at the time of the end. So sometimes, as you're going to find in this study, you're going to find that Jacob and Israel, or Israel and Judah, are mentioned together as going down. That shows that it's an end time prophecy. So in some cases, like in Jonah, Joe Dornick's favorite book, no mention of any of them. Why? Jonah was sent to Nineveh, as you mentioned. Again, let's take a look at Zechariah. You know, definitely an end time prophecy, because look, Jerusalem is mentioned more than any other book in there. I'm going to show you how I get to these numbers. So this is just an interesting chart, and you may want to save it and keep it for your Bible study. Some of the prophets spoke to both groups of people, and you'll see that the kings of Israel and Judah are mentioned in the introduction of those particular books. But it's just kind of a way of understanding, okay, usually there's a little blurb at the beginning or in the introduction, the first few verses, it shows about the prophet and who basically he's going to. But this kind of helps you to get an overall sense that if Amos, which is a relatively short book, has Israel mentioned 22 times and Joseph and then Samaria all these times, it far overshadows the time of Judah. So again, the 10 tribes were a lot more people than the folks down in the southern kingdom. Not necessarily any more important from a prophetic standpoint. Okay. Micah, I've just said here, is a microcosm of end time Bible prophecy. I'd intended to be able to do this at the lectern, but since I don't, I'm not going to really be able to just open up the Bible. So I'm just going to sum up what this particular verse says. These introductory verses of Micah basically talk about the entire earth and a message of warning going to the entire earth. And it talks about, he talks about sin, he talks about lawlessness of a people who had built their nation under God, but now had become lawless. And then in chapter 2, we find that there are leaders. This particular book is very heavily oriented with a warning to the leaders of the nation. And what do we find now? Now, we have been, this is just kind of a personal pet peeve, we have kind of been predetermined as a group of church members to look at the outside world and be condemnatory. What I'm saying is that those folks, by and large, are ignorant. You know, there, but for the grace of God go I. But the people that are really entrusted in governance are the people who should be following law. And the greatest condemnation is towards them. Now, there are people today who are in charge who know better. And I alluded to that in the sermon. Kicks, bribes, money going to family members, and so on and so forth. It's like not even a secret anymore. It's been happening for years, but it always used to be a secret. It's not a secret anymore. The most highly placed officials in our government, whether they're elected or not, Supreme Court justices and other judges, this book condemns them all. So that'll be a lot of fun to go through when we go through it. But chapter 2 talks about them devising evil. You know, people that are just set to do evil in their hearts. And we, for many years, have been so trusting in the governmental institutions under which we have been told that we should respect. We can't believe that somebody in that high position would do that to their fellow citizens. I mean, we have had a prejudice to where, oh, no, they would never do that. People have told me this here recently, the last couple of years. Oh, they couldn't do that. They couldn't get away. Well, they are, and they do. They're evil. People spend their time and their energy devising evil, and they become really good at it. It's like Denzel Washington said to the news media. He said, you know what? He said, you get good at what you practice to do. And he says, and when you practice, and you practice really hard at tearing down this country, you become really good at it. And he kind of had a smirk on his face, but you can see it. You can find it on the internet. It's quite a speech. It's really good, too. But the first judgment, look, let's make it a mission of ourselves, because we want to welcome people to this group and to this congregation. Let's make it a mission of us to not be condemnatory to others, as you mentioned, Joe. Let's focus the attention that the first judgment that God has is against the leaders and people who have not governed righteously. So I think that our false paradigm of the past, this is just personal opinion, okay, so I'm going to label it as such. The false paradigm of the past is just looking across the street at the guy and say, yeah, the guy's a pagan, he's got Christmas lights up and blah, blah. So this book shows what is happening. Now, in chapter 5, some of you that have been around for a long time know that this is one of my favorite passages of Bible prophecy, because it talks about Israel being like a roaring lion among the nations, tearing apart wherever he would go if he went through. And then at the peak of its power, in verse 10, it says, basically, you're going down. And I'm wondering out loud if that time hasn't just rapidly approached us right now. Okay, so for the future studies, let's wrap this up. Read each book. We'll start with Obadiah. Take notes. Give me one of those, Sheila. Can I? You know what I want, right?
Oh.
One of those. Where are they? What do you got? Oh, you put them in the front. Okay. Sheila tried to give them away. You know, you can get a little notebook and you can take notes. Keep it for the minor prophets. My advice. Sheila's also the one that accused me of taking all of them at Walmart so that she couldn't get them at one time. Should I mention that in detail, Sheila? Anyway, get a notebook, but ask the question at the beginning of your reading like a good journalist would do, the who, what, when, where, how, why, and how. Just even if you can't figure out the answer yourself, you're going to be stimulated to find that. Look up the names. You'll find that many of these prophets' names have meanings, and they give you a clue as to what the book is all about. And at the end of the Bible study, be ready to share what you've studied and what the speaker has covered. And then we'll try to cover everything in about 50 minutes. And sorry if we're going over that today, but I just wanted to set the stage for this. And now what I want to do is don't go anywhere. Before we have the greatest giveaway of all time, I want to, I hope I can get online here. Let me see if I'm, because if I can't get on, I know I can get online. I've done it before here. Okay, let's see. I need to find out what's available. Okay, good. Connect to that. Joe, do you remember the security key for this place? Oh, okay. You want to type it in? You just type it in. Oh, yeah. We don't want all you using your phones next time and getting on the internet here, blah, 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 blah. I've had it in here before. I don't know why I didn't save it.
Just kidding. Just kidding.
All right. Get out of here. I wanted to show you a couple of things that are not, that most of you, if you have a computer, are going to be able to use to enhance not only this study. What? It says I can't connect to the network, but is that true? Yep. Let me see, hold on. Nope, got to do the network key again. This will be worth it, believe me. I know you've had to wait. You've had waited a long time. And since you've been so good, I'm going to give away everything that I've got here to give away today. That I've got to give away here today. That is not for giveaway. The computer is. I don't know. After this, after today's performance, I don't think you're going to want this computer, believe me. Okay. Come on. Oh, you know what? I could just use my phone if I had to. Just thought about that. Use the old hotspot. the powers that be are trying to thwart this study, but we're not going to allow them. Okay, good. One way or another, we're going to get there. All right. This is a Bible study tool. It's free of charge. Now, I pay like $40 a year to get some enhancements, but what I wanted to do was just show you that sometimes when I'm doing a little bit of study and I'm trying to find something, let's just say, if you want to find every passage, Mr. Horchak mentioned several weeks ago about using a concordance. And concordances are good, but this is almost better. Now, I've got the New King James Version, but even on the free version of this, every single language in which the Bible is published, every single translation of the English language is published. So if you want to find... This is BibleGateway.com. So as you can see, Israel just... Now, this may not mean everything. Sometimes it means things, sometimes it doesn't. But you'll see on the right-hand side of the screen, what has popped up is every instance, 2,399 times in which Israel is mentioned. So to refine that further and to do the search that I did for names, I went specifically to these books. So you can see I've highlighted Hosea 44, Joel 3, Amos 32. It's just kind of a nice addition. And if you want to find, you can do any combination of names. So let's say wherever Israel and Judah, I can't see the keyboard here because it's so dark, and I ask it to be dark, so usually I can find them. You want to find every instance in the Bible in which these two are mentioned together, and then just refine it with the going through the books. Then that's one way of looking at it. And sometimes maybe they're mentioned. Let's take a look at Micah, see if they're mentioned in the same verse. And in this case, okay, Micah 1:5, all this for the transgression. This is the reason for the prophet coming. All this for the transgression of Jacob, for the sins of the house of Israel. What is the transgression of Jacob? Is it not Samaria? What would we say in today's age? We would say, what is the transgression of the United States? Is it not Washington, D.C.? That's the counterpart. Steve had asked the question about that. That is the direct counterpart. Samaria was the capital of those tribes. So when you look at that, you're saying, you know, what are the high places of Judah? Are they not Jerusalem? So that's one. Here's another one. Nate turned me on to this one, and I find this one is also very good. This is blueletterbible.org. And the default always goes to the King James Version, but I can change that to this version, the New King James Version. And what I find is good about this particular study aid is, let me do a search here. If I do a verse, let's say, let's go back to Micah 5, verse 7. Let's go there. I'll show you what I find good about that is that there are tools associated with that verse, and you can see an interlinear notation. You can look at the various Bibles. You can see cross references, and that's what I use it for a lot to see. Sometimes you like, you know, you use in the middle of your Bible, you use those cross references when there's something. This makes that study good. So thanks for that, Nate. I use this a lot. And now I want to. Now I want to just, this one last thing is I'm going to show you Hughes' spreadsheet and Bible chronology from Hugh. Okay, don't update. We'll just expand this. This has got every year on the left from the time of creation, okay? He spent a lot of time with this, as you can imagine. But it's got these, charts down here, various things that were interesting to him, end time chronology. We worked on this a little bit together last year, the seals chart, the relationship among the seven seals, seven trumpets, three woes, seven last plagues. That's always an interesting one to study, right? This puts it all in order with the seven seals, trumpets, three woes, three last plagues. It's got so many things, and I was using it to establish, and then up top here you can see Adam, Seth, the various lines all the way through, and it goes on and 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 on over this way. It's a big old spreadsheet, and this is just, and then it's got the history of Israel, Judah, and everything, so I'm willing to share this with any. I think I can email this to anybody that wants it, but I won't just send it out unless you really want it. I mean, now you talk about something that, now with dates. Dates are always approximate, okay? And so it may differ with something Dr. Hay wrote 40, 50 years ago. Who cares? They're in the ballpark, you know, they're in the kitchen. All right. Now, maybe just get me a little bit more light up here so I can do this fabulous, fabulous giveaway.